This is CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, broadcasting from unceded Musqueam territory on the University of British Columbia campus. Hello and welcome to Synchronicity. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and today we're speaking with Yvonne Talley. She is the author of Breaking Up With Busy, Real Life Solutions for Overscheduled Women. Yvonne leads meditation and mindfulness programs for corporations, private groups, and individuals in Silicon Valley and throughout the United States. She's also an NLP master practitioner, and she co-founded a fitness and lifestyle company called Poised Inc., and you can find her at YvonneTalley.com. Welcome to the show, Yvonne.
Oh, thank you. It's my pleasure to be with you.
Thanks for being with us. So you were already teaching wellness and meditation and fitness, and then you realized that you were overscheduled to the point where you ended up in the hospital.
Yes, I was actually been in the business of health and wellness for over 20 years when I had my, what I call my wake-up call, and that was I was so busy helping other people to live a vibrant and healthy and well life that I missed my own signs of being overscheduled and way too busy. You know, the sleepless nights, the cramped schedules. I was raising my daughter as a single mother, so I had a lot on my plate as far as where that was concerned, splitting my time slicing everything throughout the day. And I missed my own signs. And yes, absolutely, I ended up in the hospital thinking I was having a heart attack. And in fact, I was having a panic attack. And what's interesting about that is I'd never had one before. Thank goodness I haven't had one since then, but it sure scared me enough that I began to make some real shifts. And what was so interesting about it for me was I had these solutions and practices that I was sharing with my clients, but you know, I was that cobbler without the shoes. I was using them for my practice, but yet not applying them to myself. And I thought, you know, if I brought this into my life and missed all of these signs, here I am, a positive thinking, you know, organic eating, exercising person, there's got to be a bigger picture here, because I've always had prided myself on being in touch with these types of things, but yet I was way out of whack as far as my priorities went when it came to my own life. So here we are. I wrote a book about it and really wanted to share those solutions to a larger audience. And that's how we got to this moment in time now.
Thanks, Yvonne. Now, the book is specifically geared towards women. Why is that? Because I feel like we're all super pretty overscheduled.
Yes, Marie, we are. And it is definitely a culture now, much more than it's ever been before. And I identify three really significant things, and I'll start with the first, and that's economics. So yes, men and women are in this together as far as the culture goes. But you know, women are affected by it much more so, especially from this economic standpoint. And you know, as economics grow and incomes rise, time is seen as much more valuable, so we don't want to waste it, and we pack in as much as we can every day, and we end up being very busy. In addition to us having a greater value to busy, women still, as we know, make about 80 cents on the dollar compared to men, and if you're a woman of color, that's about 63 cents on the dollar, so we have to work longer just to make the same amount. And about two-thirds of the women working outside of the home have school-age children. So now we've got that on top of it. We're caring for those children, many of us as single mothers. In addition to that, we still take on 80% of what's called non-paid work, Marie, and that's all of the nuts and bolts that it takes to make life go. And every day we spend about 14 hours, and I would guess that is a conservative estimate, about 14 hours in this category, and that's everything from taking care of the family, doctor's appointments, making sure the home fires are burning, as they say, and that still falls to women. So you can see just from a concrete level that this really does affect women so much more. And in addition to that, my practice had primarily been with women. That's expanded now out into corporations and individuals, men and women. As I said, we share this as a culture, but it affects women much more.
And this is a bit of an overgeneralization, but the male brain and the female brain do have some significant differences. And I notice that as a woman, I seem to find the politics of the work world more challenging, and leaving all of that at work, it seems to come home with me much more than I see in my male friends.
Yes, I think we have to take a look at history, or certainly our ancestry, for that. You know, it's some say it's in our DNA. As far as women are nurturers, we are, and again, broad brush here, we are the ones that have always been responsible for making sure that our children are cared for. That's not to say men don't, but again, a broad brush here. Typically, the woman, that falls to the woman, and so we're the ones that are making sure that they get to the level of adulthood so we can carry on the species, so to speak. So this is kind of in our DNA. And one of the things I always like to point out is that men don't usually experience what we call guilt as much as women do. And I think we can take a page from their playbook. You know, they experience about 15% more of leisure a week, which turns out to be about 40 minutes a day. So, and they don't have a guilty feeling about that, typically. In all my years of practice, I've never had a male client come in and say, you know, I feel so guilty about spending 2-3 hours at the golf course or the gym or wherever it may be. And I think that's fantastic. I think that we can really learn from that and now start to adopt that permission to take care of ourselves, because if we don't take care of ourselves first, we will not be able to sustain the wellness and the care for people such as our children and our significant relationships.
Now, I know a lot of people who are in heterosexual romantic partnerships, and what'll happen a lot of the time is that the male will be indulging in that leisure that he needs to do to recharge himself, while the woman is still working away either business type work at home, or she's cleaning the house or whatever. And then she'll feel resentment because she'll see him sitting on his butt and she's like, well, I'm doing so much work. So that adds this other layer of stress to it. How do you suggest we deal with that? Because it's kind of like, well, if the house needs to still be cleaned or the bills still need to be paid, I don't feel like I have time to sit down and relax.
Yeah, and that's a conversation. And one of the things I really admire about the millennials today, and they do get a bad rap as being a non-interested, self, you know, absorbed generation. And aren't we all from one time to another? But the thing I really admire about their generation is that they are now taking time to job share, if you will, at home. So they split those chores up more than perhaps earlier generations. And you lead to a much bigger kind of situation as far as women being in this place where the example that you gave was that she continues to work while her partner is perhaps enjoying leisure of some kind. And that really falls to, how can we do that? We absolutely have to have a conversation about that. And and coming from a place of not only need, but want and desire, is, you know, we have to take a look at all of that. So I would say, let's back up first and take care of what we can, and that's our own feelings within the circumstances or situation. And I always say the first thing we want to identify is, what is our need-want connection? And there's an exercise in the book that I refer to as your need-want connection, because we can't get to that want until we decide or determine or dig up what we need to get there. And then the other question we want to ask ourselves is, not only what do I want and what do I need to get there, but what will change for me when I have what I want? And that will start to open up that conversation within ourselves. We can get some clarity around that. And then when we go to our partner and we have that conversation, we can speak from a place of, I need and I want, and here's how it would work for me, and then have that open dialogue, because getting frustrated and resentful is going to keep us stuck in the same place that we are. We're going to just keep going in that endless loop of feeling frustration and then into resentment and then into anger, and that's going to deteriorate the relationship as a whole.
And part of it is being willing to ask for help, right? Because sometimes I know that I will have moments of being kind of passive aggressive if my partner is doing something that I feel isn't valuable and I'm working on something important. I might do it more loudly, and hope that he'll notice and offer help or something like that. And, you know, that never works.
No, it doesn't. And I really admire you for being so open with that, because that passive aggressive kind of thing happens in so many relationships, not just marriage or partnership, but at work as well, and with our children as well. So once that gets set up, we have to figure out a way to break that. And when you said, you know, asking for help, in the book I have an exercise called the artful ask. You know, many of us forget that our overly helpful nature may prevent others from taking on that helping role, because the way that we've set it up so often, so many times, is that, oh, she's got this. She always takes care of that. And then that gets as part of it, that becomes part of the relationship. So we have to slow that down a bit and ask for help. And if we feel, you know, many of us feel uncomfortable in being in that vulnerable position, like, oh gosh, what if they don't do it the way that I want, and I can't count on them to get it done. And, you know, I don't like anybody to know that I need anything. Well, we're not going to get very far in life having rich relationships if we continue to allow ourselves to be in that space. So we have to be able to have the artful ask. And if anything can help you feel not guilty about doing that, just remember, life is about giving and receiving. And when we're the one that's always doing things all the time for somebody else, we take away from them that experience of being able to do something for someone else. You know that great feeling that you get when you've done something and that person is showing appreciation for that? Or just that feeling within yourself that you did the right thing and you were coming from a place of kindness and compassion? That's really important to allow the people that we share our lives with to have that experience as well. And you deserve to have that help. You deserve to be able to receive kindness and assistance when you need it.
Hmm. Thanks, Yvonne. Now, you mentioned the need-want connection. Can we talk a little bit more about what you mean by that?
Yes. So often we get kind of stuck in this place of, I want this and I want that, and we go after things, grab, because we are busy. So we kind of get to that place where we disconnect from our feelings. You know, when we're so busy, and we are, if we've got a lot of anxiety going on or a lot of pressure, and it's coming in and out of our life, it's pretty difficult to really get into our feelings outside of what we don't want to feel, right? So we get focused on this habit of trying to avoid the anxiety, but yet still being in that loop of anxiety, worry, frustration, or as you said earlier, resentment. So getting back to that need-want connection, what do I really want? And that second question, what will change for me when I have it? And what do I need that will move me towards what I really want? And once we start to answer those questions, because once we open that box a little bit and dig a little bit around, we can get to that other question, that is, why now? And once we can get to the why now, that is when we've discovered that need-want connection. And that will make the difference for the why now. Why is today or next week any different for me to, I'll use losing weight because this is something that everybody talks about. Why is now any different for me to lose that 5 pounds? What has changed for me? Well, when we get to that knee part, gee, I need to feel like I'm healthier. I need to be healthier. Why is that? Why do I want that? Well, I want to spend more time with my kids. I want to have more energy. I want to be more alert at work. And so when we start to make these connections with each other, then we can get to that why now, because that's what's going to change it for us. So that's really the first place to begin, is to start to unwrap that need-want connection. Mm-hmm. And then develop from there. We want to cultivate strategies that will form those really good habits for us that we can sustain. And to be able to do that, we want to take that one shift, that one small step at a time, rather than overwhelming us with, here I go again. I've got to make all these changes. I've got to go exercise. I've got to go to the special grocery store to get the right food so I can lose the weight. So now what's happened? We've shifted our attention on what we don't want, the inconvenience of that want, rather than keeping our awareness and our attention on what we do want. And I always try to tell people, share with them, use your energy to focus on what you want, not what you fear or what you're trying to avoid.
That's powerful, but it can be really hard because it's the fears that tend to drive us so much, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And this idea of permission, this is one of the things I've really noticed since the book has come out, and having this opportunity to speak with so many people is really enriching and wonderful to see, because what I've noticed is that so many women won't allow themselves to have the permission to do this, to create time and space for themselves, or to release them from some of these habits that are keeping them trapped in this busy kind of pace. And I always say to them, you know, nobody's going to give you permission unless you give yourself permission. So you've got to make that first shift. And fear is viable. Fear is an important feeling. It helps us stay out of harm's way. But when we have it continually going in and out of our lives, then we get stuck in that place where we allow the fear to intimidate us rather than to motivate us. So shifting that again, how can I use my fear to motivate me? And there's a real simple exercise that might seem a bit silly, but works really well, especially if you're visual. You know, just bring that fear right up in front of to your conscious mind. What am I afraid of? Well, I'm afraid if I do this that my boss will get upset with me and then I won't get the promotion, or my partner will be frustrated with me and then we'll create more distance. Okay. So what am I afraid of? I'm going to bring that up in front of me. And I always say everything you could possibly want in life is going to be on that other side of fear. So you're going to greet that fear. I'm afraid that you're going to be frustrated, or I'm afraid you're going to leave me if you know the true me. And you just say it right out loud. And you say hello to that fear. I'm afraid of this. And then you say goodbye to that fear. And you can imagine even using a line on the floor, and you step over that line and physically walk 5 or 6, 10 paces away, and then turn around and wave goodbye to that fear. Again, sounds like a really kind of almost silly thing to do, and that's even better. Because if you feel silly while you're doing it, you've just disarmed that undefined fear. You've brought it out into the open. You've used a system or a technique that you've said hello to it. You've acknowledged it. You've said goodbye to it. Now, does that mean it's going to disappear overnight? And by the way, I'm not talking about terrors or disorders of any kind. I'm talking about the things that we feel anxious and fearful, more anxious than fearful about each day. So practicing that one little thing will help de-energize, if you will, that fear that's sitting underneath there, and bringing it out in the open, you can define it. Then you can find a solution for it.
Do groovy people watching amazing artists tell their artivism stories in dance, music, storytelling, visual art, celebrating our stunning Coast Salish land feel right to you? Vines Art Festival, August 8th to 19th, runs at parks throughout Vancouver like Trout Lake Park, Kitsilano Beach, Crab Park, Gravel Island, Roundhouse Community Center, and Strathcona Park. Watch Kim Mortal, Missy D, Immigrant Lessons, Pia Massey, and the Indigenous artists from Resilient Roots create a world you want to live in. Oh, and did I mention that it's all free? VinesArtFestival.com.
Are you looking for a volunteer opportunity that fits your schedule? Being a big sister takes less time than you think, and you can choose the volunteer opportunity that fits your life. Spend just 1 hour a week as a study buddy, tutor, or 2 hours a week as a big sister. Check out the various mentoring programs at Big Sisters of BC Lower Mainland and find a volunteer position and a little sister that will suit you to a T. Visit bigsisters.bc.ca for more information today.
We're speaking right now with Yvonne Talley. She's the author of Breaking Up with Busy, Real Life Solutions for Overscheduled Women. You can find her at YvonneTalley.com. So you talk about an OSW, overscheduled woman. And I'm wondering if there's like how many hours a week of busyness does that mean? Because for me, a lot of people see me as being really busy, and I look at other people in my life and they're working more hours than I am, but I think I do a lot of different contract work. So the scheduling is sort of all over the place and I never get into a routine. So even though I might only be working 20 hours a week where someone else is working 40, the juggling of all of that information and getting to different places and dealing with different organizations feels like almost as much work. So how do people, and I know also I'm kind of rambling here, but I know that we tend to, especially as women and especially if we're on social media, we tend to feel like we're never doing enough because we look at other people who have four kids and they're all in ballet and piano and you're a CEO of a Fortune 500. Like, I don't know how people do it. And I just have trouble balancing my little part-time schedule.
Oh my goodness, Marie, you make such great points. Let's take technology and social media. Typically, they're not doing it. Because we've got, and this is what I find fascinating. You know, I talked about the economics of busy. The second piece is technology. And Marie, that's really what connects men and women right there, because we all share this. This is how it's become one of the big reasons why busy has become such a huge part of our culture now, is this social media. And I say, you know, we're all playing this comparison game, even though we all know it's fake. It's the glossy and the beautiful pictures and the right filters. And it doesn't really look like real life. Some of them, I'm sure, are real life as examples of their real life. Most are not, because we all want to be accepted. We all want to be a part of what's going on. And as human beings, we want to connect. We want to be similar. We want to have our own uniqueness, but we want you to be able to understand us enough that you'll get what we're doing. And the idea of busy gives us that false sense of importance, because if you're busy and I'm busy, then we can connect. And it's that false sense of importance that comes from busy and all of this technology that we know has so many addictive qualities to it, that we're now heading at this really crazy pace. Excuse me. So part of this has to do with technology, and part of it has to do with our desire to be able to fit in. And these hours that we work might be, what, like you said, 20 hours for you and maybe 80 hours for somebody else. What, it really doesn't matter. It's our perception of how it feels in our life. You know, when we look at how much time we spend in technology just on our phone each day, we're using 5 hours that day just to play around with our phone, and we're touching it nearly 3,000 times a day. And that's probably a conservative estimate. So you can see, if we're spending that much time just on our phone, we're busy. And we spend about 20 minutes a day just looking for things that we've misplaced because we're distracted and busy. Things like our car keys or our kids, maybe even. But the point is that it's how you feel, because there's no downtime. Quite often, there's no downtime anymore. And that's why I tell people, you know, that I share with my clients when they come in and they have that sense of feeling busy as though they're doing too much, but yet not enough. And we've got, you know, jumbled schedules and social media, and I feel like I'm not enough. It's this idea of being enough. And first thing I will suggest to them is step outside, look up, and take a deep breath in. And often they'll look at me as though I've grown two heads. What? How is that on earth going to help me? Well, it's going to start a practice of doing something good for yourself. And that is that deep breath is critical for our wellness. And here's why. When we take a deep breath in, we stimulate something called the vagus nerve, which triggers our nervous system to slow our heart rate, lower our blood pressure, and decrease our cortisol. These are all things that get shifted and alerted when we're feeling stressed and anxious. So just by taking some deep breaths, you can begin to create that shift within your body. Now, the reason why I say go outside whenever possible is that this disconnection of nature is the third piece, that it's really creating a lot or allowing us to spend even more time with our electronics and our technology and this busy, busy pace. Because when we walk out into nature as human beings, what happens? All of our senses are stimulated. Our eyes can see beautiful, beautiful things. We smell the fragrance of nature. We can look up and see the abundant, vast sky that goes on forever and ever. And if you've ever felt alone, certainly looking up and connecting with the beauty that's all around us can remind you that you're not alone, that you are part of this beautiful planet and universe as it moves through you, around you, and within you. So those things are important. Simple, right? Simple, simple techniques that you can use to begin your practice of wellness, of self-nurturing.
That even brings up, as with regards to our health, not only just the stress aspect, but even the health of our eyes. We spend so much time looking at screens, and our eyes need to be able to focus on the distance as well. Otherwise, we become nearsighted and need glasses.
Yes, and that's something that I actually experienced myself until I found out that information, that we have to be able to move away from that screen. They say every 20 minutes to just look up for, you know, 30 seconds and look at something further away. And also, you know, we say now that sitting is the new big health issue. So we want to get up. We want to set that timer on our computer and get up and move about every 40 to 45 minutes. And again, I've often had people say, I don't have time to do that. Well, what happens is we refresh our ability to concentrate. And let's not forget kind of the mechanics that are going on here in our body. You know, our prefrontal cortex, when we're under our brain, when we're under pressure, that prefrontal cortex, which, by the way, is the area that manages complex processing like reasoning and logic and problem solving and planning, and plays a significant role in focusing our attention and developing and pursuing our goals. Well, that gets muted. That gets shut down when we're under pressure. And when we're feeling stress, that's part of the mechanics that happen within the brain. So releasing yourself from your computer station and just getting up and taking a simple 5-minute walk around the office or outside or down the staircase and back up again, a couple of deep breaths, you're going to come back with a renewed sense of not only energy, but focus as well. And you asked me an earlier question about the hours of busy. You know, I just touched on it real lightly. We spend about 14 hours a day just in that category of non-paid work, of making things, actually in the category of what I call the musts, all of the things that it takes to get the work life or the life going and maintained. And what we've done is we spend so much time in the must category, a little bit of time in what I call the want category, which represents long-range goals and lifestyle additions and removals and replacements. But there's a category that we forgot about, and that category is the just because. And this is another way that we can, again, rekindle our focus, our sense of well-being, disconnect from that busy pace. It's a really important element to remember, and it's also where pleasure can expand without judgment or justification. It can be as simple as a walk just because it's a beautiful day, or spontaneously grabbing coffee with a friend. But it's an important piece of our day, because if we have a sense that we're caring for ourselves, our attitude's going to shift as well. And when our attitude shifts to a more positive frame of mind, again, we're going to be able to not only stimulate all areas of the brain coding that prefrontal cortex, we're going to have a better sense of what we can pay attention to. We'll be more efficient, we'll be more productive. And that's another way we could start to cut down on this undefined busyness.
Thanks, Yvonne. I'm curious if you advocate for any kind of minimalism or cutting down on our spending, because I know that here in Vancouver, and I know this is a problem in a lot of U.S. cities as well, there's like no affordability of housing. In this city, there's a very low rental vacancy rate, and the price of purchasing condos and stuff is very high. So a lot of people are just constantly spinning their wheels just to survive. And they don't really feel like they can afford to do anything just because they're already working so, so hard. Do you have any advice for someone who's feeling like that?
Yes. let's not forget you deserve it, and yes, you can have time for it. And I'm going to use a couple of examples for that. To your point, I live in the middle of the Silicon Valley, you know, the heartbeat of the world, so to speak.
Very expensive there, yeah.
Google down the street and Facebook around the corner type of a situation. And we have within our main road, we have campers parked one after the other. Now, this is the main street that goes, it's a four-lane, six-lane street that goes through the middle of all of these beautiful little towns, Atherton, Menlo Park, Palo Alto. And along those streets, along this street are campers because people cannot afford rent. So they're living in campers. And these are people who go out every single day to professional careers. So this is something that affects all of us and can be quite frustrating. You know, when you hear the stats, oh, our economy has improved and people are making more money now than ever, and you're living in a camper or you can't find feasible housing, it doesn't feel like things are better than ever before. And that can become a real hamster wheel for us. So we absolutely have to have some ways to bring some joy and pleasure into our lives. I was raised by a single mom. Her money was always extremely tight. We didn't have a lot. She worked two jobs most of the time. But boy, I tell you, she provided us with a fun and happy household. I mean, if it was tag in the backyard or hide and seek through the house, she found a way to make things fun. And that's what we have to go back to, I believe, is taking the simple things and creating fun moments out of them. Because I would say, I think fun is really underrated. It's important to laugh, even in the tough times, especially in the tough times. And one of the things I try to remind people is find that Friday state of mind. You know, research shows that if we take a day off, it's good for our health. Well, many of us can't take a day off. So how about if we create and plan to take a small space of time? Perhaps it's a walk with a friend. As I said earlier, coffee with a friend, make a new friend of some kind, but plan that time when you can disconnect on a healthy, well level, even if it's for 15 minutes, but allow yourself to be in that Friday state of mind. You'll shift that constant focus on what you don't want, and you'll start to develop that practice as far as not only do you deserve to have that space of time, but also you'll develop that practice of creating that for yourself with a different attitude, a self-care moment. And we've got to get creative with this because we do not have to go out to spend money. That's looking outward for something that is going to help us feel better inward. Life gets done and we create who we are from the inside out, not the other way around.
Thanks, Yvonne. So it sounds like even if you're in a position where you have to work two or three jobs, you may be working 7 days a week just to be able to put food on the table for your children or something and pay the rent, there are moments within the day that we can take time for ourselves and have that just because break.
Yeah, that just because break. And, you know, all these are all little things that we can do to begin to shift that. And also, I think really important is ask for help. And that can be really difficult, especially if you're struggling financially, because there's this sense that as an adult, we should have this whole financial thing figured out. And there's this shame and embarrassment if we've hit rough times that we're less than. But I venture to say that there's a lot more people in that pocket than otherwise. And so asking for help, and I call that the inner circle. We have these three kind of circles that we connect with, our inner circle, outer circle, and the peripheral circle. In this inner circle are the people that you know love you, have your best interest at heart, have shown that time and time again, and that you feel completely confident with. And that's the circle you want to go to and ask for help. I'm struggling here. I need some help. You know, water my lawn, or, you know, walk with me, whatever it might be on the simplest terms. What we're trying to do is create those sacred moments and those times with people that we feel connected to. We know that our social circle is one of the top five things to keep us healthy. I always thought it was exercise. I think it comes, social connections come above exercise. So this is very important that we have these connections. Well, if you're a person that doesn't have that opportunity, perhaps you feel as though you don't have that inner circle, then it's time to create one. And that can begin with one person. But make that connection so that you have somebody not only that you can share your difficult time with, that can be a positive influence in your life, but also that you can ask for help from. And again, that goes back to that artful ask. You know, give them the opportunity to help so they can have that joyful experience of being of service and giving.
Again, we're speaking with Yvonne Talley. She's the author of Breaking Up with Busy, Real Life Solutions for Overscheduled Women. You talk about the different types of overscheduled personalities and how we might be seeking validation or feeling a value in the world by being busy or by having problems saying no. And because you're talking about the social circle right now, I notice that in your book, you also mentioned that feeling of we're doing something not because we want to, but out of obligation. And I find that is the most, one of the most draining things that kind of hovers over like a dark cloud throughout my whole day. Even if the interaction might only be 5 or 10 minutes, I feel like it sucks a lot more energy.
Well, congratulations for you acknowledging that, because I bet that's going to shift for you now. Again, it's when we bring that into the light and we now have that sense, this feels like something I have to do. And that's really about taming time, what I call taming time. And that exercise is about, is this something I have to do? I want to do? I need to do? Do I feel good when I do this or I say yes to this? Do I feel as though it's enriching my inner circle? You know, which circle is this for when we do things that we feel we're obligated for? Is this our inner circle? Is this peripheral circle? Is this the outer circle? Because that can help us now start to determine, Marie, our time and edit that time. That's very important as far as not only breaking up from busy, but also having bringing you back to that center space where you have some time for clarity, for reflection. And also, you know, the overscheduled woman is really about what you just said. It's that imbalance between obligation and expectation and the lack of personal replenishment. And that leaves many women feeling it, so they just can't catch up with their lives because there's this obligation and demand to be all, do all, be all to everyone all of the time. And, you know, that's not something that we can sustain. Gloria Steinem, I remember, said you can't have it all if you have to do it all. Again, it goes back to we've got to be able to share the load. Very important. Ask for help. Share the load. Be on the giving and the receiving end, not one or the other all the time. And this idea that we're not enough, again, that technology plays into that constant comparison. You are enough. We are not here to be perfect. We're here to make progress. And we have to remember that, especially as women. We can't be all of the time. Sometimes just enough is absolutely 100% good enough.
Yvonne, are you the one, or was this a story of someone else who went to 2 weddings in one day out of the obligation to do it all?
Yes, that's in my book about a client that I had that went to 2 weddings. And when we had the conversation, I said, you know, I'm curious about this. She said, well, I can't let them down. They both want me there. Well, now that goes to something much deeper than just focusing on what the other person wants, because this is really about her feeling as though she wants to be accepted. She wants to excel. She wants to see as the exception. So she's going to go above and beyond. By the way, this was a real alpha woman, highly successful corporate career, and still she was having those feelings of always having to go far beyond the expectation, because very much the alpha woman often has this underlying fear of just being average. So yeah, I also had another client that would get in the morning, she would take her frozen Jenny Craig meal out of the freezer. She'd put it on the dashboard of her car, and then she would start her day. Kids drop off to the gym, all the errands that she had to run, whatever it might have been. And she said that it was great because by noon, the meal was defrosted enough and warm enough after being in the sun that she could just eat it while she continued to be on the go. And I'll never forget, because I asked her to repeat it, because I wanted to make sure I had that clear. And when we discussed, you know, where her priorities were coming from, this, because we have to figure out, what am I getting from this unresourceful behavior? And what is it that I'm, what are the intangibles that I'm not getting, and how can I provide those for myself? So I'm happy to say that after working with her for some time, she did change and shift that habit into having a more stable way of, a more rich way, I guess you could say, of having her lunch throughout the day. Because that's something that's, it's humorous, but it's not good for us on any level.
Well, if you get a good case of food poisoning, you'll have to take a couple days off, I guess. So.
Yeah, not a safe thing to do, for sure.
So, Yvonne, you mentioned the inner circle and the can you remind me of the three circles again, the inner circle?
Yeah, so the inner circle is the circle that all of the people that you know support and love you, and that you can trust, and that you can, you know, where you can just take that deep breath, put your feet up and say, I'm home, and they're there, they understand you, they get you. There's a sense of confidence in the relationship, great confidence in the relationship, trust and love. And then as we move out, these are the, you know, the, that inner circle is your family and your loved ones. As you move out, these are the people that you see on a regular basis, that you know, the people at work, that kind of circle, the people that you know at the gym, that you see, that you've maybe done things once or twice with. And these are the, and from that, we move into that peripheral circle. These are people you see on occasion. You've never really been to their house. You might see them in social settings. So when we become aware of these three circles, so to speak, then we can start to ask ourselves, when we do, as you said earlier, I often feel obligated to do X, Y, or Z. We can take that pause and say, which circle is this going to enrich? And if your answer is the peripheral circle or even the outer circle, and you have that sense of dread or conflict within yourself, and it feels just so obligatory and not something that you're looking forward to, that's a good sign that maybe you should edit your yes into what I call the healthy no, and excuse yourself from that obligation.
Thanks for clarifying that, Yvonne. Now, I have a question about the circles, because I find that I like to keep my inner circle really tight, just a small handful of people. And I do have sort of I have people who I consider fairly close friends, but I don't consider them in my inner circle. And yet they may consider me to be in their inner circle. And this is where I have the challenge, because they may be reaching out to me for support at the same level that I'd be maybe giving my romantic partner. And I'm just not able to do that. But yet I feel that guilt because they seem to need it. They keep coming to me for it. And I keep trying to deflect it as much as I can within, you know, being kind and respectful. And I imagine that that's a problem for a lot of people that have trouble, who are very nurturing and maybe have trouble saying no.
Yeah, and that guilt gets in there, and that becomes kind of a trigger response for us to feel guilty. And we know that that's not going to do anything that's going to be resourceful for us. That's a source of energy that we're expanding within us. That's not going to do anything that's going to help us to move forward or be of service to ourselves or the person that we're speaking of. And when a relationship is kind of off in that sense, where that person is feeling closer to you than perhaps than you're feeling closer to them, it's worth a conversation in a compassionate way. And also, you want to start slow. You know, if you've always been there for that person, all of a sudden abruptly saying, I'm not available, is not a compassionate way to start to make that shift. And you don't even have to express it to them, but you have to be consistent. Mm-hmm. You have to be clear with your communication, keep it simple, and be consistent. And that's what I call, that's one of the healthy boundaries exercises that I have. And, you know, boundaries, are, I always say boundaries are like handrails on a staircase. Everyone feels better when they're there. And if you're always saying yes to this person and being available to them, then it's going to feel very uncomfortable for them when you start to pull back. So you're going to have to, as I said, have clear communication, keep it simple, be compassionate, but consistency is going to be the key. Because you cannot live their life, but yet you can be compassionate towards their feelings. But the first person And I don't mean this in a selfish, self-centered way. The first person that you have to take care of, feeling-wise, emotion, feelings, all of that, your health, your wellness, is yourself. And you want to be able to have a life that you can sustain, that's going to be a life that not only enriches you from all of those levels, but also enriches your inner circle relationships. Mm-hmm. Yes, we have to care for the outer circle, not so much the peripheral circle. But we have to determine where we're going to spend our time and energy and where it's most important and valuable to us.
Thanks, Yvonne. Can we talk a little bit? We just have a few minutes left in the show, but I'd love to talk a little bit about your work with neuro-linguistic programming as well and how you incorporate that into Breaking Up with Busy.
Yes. Well, that example that I gave you earlier about walking through fear is a little bit of the neurolinguistics. So just for the people that might not know what that is, neurolinguistic programming, often referred to as NLP, it uses a variety of techniques for improving communication and personal growth. So the neuro refers to the neurology of how we process our experiences, and we do that via our senses. And the linguistic refers to the language we use to communicate those experiences. And we apply meaning to that information through our senses. We have to have meaning there, and that's how we make it important to us first and then to others, conveying that. And our senses develop what's called our own unique language. So the programming is how we communicate that information to ourselves to achieve our goals and to others. And the results, of course, are strategies for what we can do and what we want to create. And what I find that when I have layered in the NLP techniques, and I'm not a straight-on NLPer, I like to take those techniques and then expand them out so they're less complicated and more accessible for us to use on a daily basis. But what I found is they're much more potent when blended with the mindful practices, such as meditation, 3-minute meditation, visually guided meditation, self-guided meditation, and positive visualization. That's often what we do in a lot of athletics and sports training. And so I blended the NLP approach with not only mindfulness, with several of the mindfulness practices in the book, but also, again, with the visualization.
Thanks, Yvonne. I'm curious, what is your top one or two practices or exercises or meditations in the book? What's your favorite?
Yes. Well, I have a section called The Essentials. And one of those essentials is the 3-minute meditation. And that is my number one go-to. And it's always interesting when I have a new client come in and I say, well, we've got, you know, let's establish a practice of meditation. And their first thing is, you've got to be off your rocker. Here you want, well, I'm trying to break up with busy, and now you're adding something else on. Well, what happens is we want to create a practice because, again, we want to get our brain and our mind to function together in a clear manner. We also want to reduce those feelings of anxiousness and anxiety, and we want to use our power of imagination to bring into our lives what we want. So we can get those things from meditation. We can produce those environments within our mind and our brain that are going to bring us into kind of a rehearsal, if you will, a mental rehearsal, where we can begin creating the feelings and the experiences that we want in life. And we can do that through meditation. So I would start out with that 3-minute meditation. And then I would say the second one, Marie, again, is to establish healthy boundaries. And we have to slow down enough to begin that process. Everything I'm talking about here is a practice. What we practice grows strong. It's not about making these huge, big leaps and changes. It's about taking in small practices so we can develop them into meaningful, well-formed habits. So how do we get out of that pace? Well, rather than cutting your calendar in half and saying no to everybody that you said way too many yeses to, let's start out a little bit small. Let's observe ourselves first. And I have 3 things that I can recommend. Slow down the way you talk. Slow down the way you walk. And slow down the way you drive. Mm-hmm. Practice that for an afternoon or a day. And not that you're going to talk slower in your life forever, But what it does, it's going to bring you to a mindful place to begin to be aware, and awareness can't be undone, aware of just exactly what your pace is. And then you can start to make some shifts to slow it down.
So if we're slowing down our walking and our driving, that means we have to leave sooner, right? To give ourselves a little more time.
Well, if you're one of those people, which I have to confess I am oftentimes, just going to do it right down to the minute, or there's other people, such as my daughter, she always leaves enough time on the beginning, on the end. So it depends on what type of habit you've already established for that. And remember, this is about bringing awareness. This isn't necessarily something you're going to do for the rest of your life. It's just bringing an awareness to you. Gee, this is what my pace is. And you just brought it up, Marie. You just identified you're probably one of those types of people that leaves right on the last minute that you can go. You might be a time optimist. That's one of the types of overscheduled women. You probably are leaving right at the moment that you have to leave, rather than 5 or 10 or 3 or 4 minutes earlier, so you can have that pace. So again, it's going to bring a sense of awareness, and what you do with that is going to be based upon how much time and space you can create for yourself to really bring into your life. Explore. Think of yourself as an explorer of what you want.
Thanks, Yvonne. We have been speaking with Yvonne Talley. She's the author of Breaking Up with Busy, Real Life Solutions for Overscheduled Women. And her website is YvonneTalley.com. And I'm just wondering if there's one thing that you want people to really remember today, what would that be?
I want them to remember that they deserve to live the life that they desire, and that they can do it. This isn't about how much money we make, how old or young we are. This is about having the confidence to know that you deserve the life that you desire, and there's ways that you can bring that in. You are fully capable. Everything that you need is within you right now at this moment, and don't let anyone tell you you are less than that.
Beautifully said. Thank you, Yvonne. Again, the name of the book is Breaking Up with Busy. Thank you to Yvonne for being with us today. And thank you for being with us this hour. I want to send you so much love. Be well. Namaste. Up next is Parts Unknown with DJ Chris Arific on CITR.
Join Joe Dworczyk and her comrades in stand-up comedy on August 13th at the Yuck Yucks Comedy Club as they attempt to make you laugh for a good cause, raising money for the Residents for Independent Living Society. The lineup includes Megan Milton, Andrew Valance, Julia Stretch, Claire Pollock, Haley Beamish, and Byron Bertram, with Katie Ellen Humphreys as the headliner. The doors are at 7 with the show at 8, with all money going directly to the Residents for Independent Living Society. For ticket information, go to yuckyucks.com/Vancouver.
Tune in to La Fiesta every other Sunday from 3 to 5 p.m. with your host, Nick Arana. Listen to internationally acclaimed musica latina caliente that makes your body move and your heart beat.
Shri Bhagavate.